Blog Talk Radio.
All right, and welcome to Penn's Vlog Talk. I am your host, Jeff Lemon. We're going to be joined by Daniel Evans here in a few minutes. We wanted to cover the Sutter trade from yesterday, and apparently it's come out in the paper that Sutter had a couple things to say, and I just wanted to kind of digest that for a second. One of the things he said was there's an expectation in Pittsburgh of a third line center that doesn't exist anywhere else simply because of how good Jordan Staal was as a Penguin. I'm going to cover that in a second, but he rounds it out by basically saying that he's gotten better as a player the last 3 years tenfold. The first part of that quote I have an issue with. I don't think that the Penguins were expecting another Jordan Staal. The fact that Brandon Sutter could even compare himself to Jordan Staal is a little bit of a misnomer. I also don't think that the Penguins expected a ton out of Sutter other than winning in the faceoff circle and obviously putting the puck in the net, which he has done, but not to the expectations that the Penguins wanted. I sort of take his comment as a backtrack in a way. I think he's laying excuses as to why maybe his time in Pittsburgh wasn't really as proficient. I think he's going to be happy in Vancouver, sitting in the cellar with the Sedin twins. I just don't understand why it is that some of these guys that come to Pittsburgh and play, when they leave, say some of the stuff that they do. You know, are the Penguins going to be better without Sutter? Absolutely. But if you listen to guys like Rob Rossi, who write for the Trib, they seem to think that this trade in and of itself wasn't bad, but that the Penguins are going to somehow miss Sutter in a big, big way. And we've talked about, you know, the trade and getting Bonino and Clendening, but the idea here is that Brandon Sutter is a very, very one-dimensional player, and the Penguins truly need it. Not necessarily a guy that was great at faceoffs and could put the puck in the net, but they needed somebody who could be a defensive specialist, and Brandon Sutter was just not that player. So while I can appreciate his thoughts, I think obviously anytime you're traded twice by the same general manager, there's going to be some bitterness there, and I don't blame him as far as that goes. But at the same time, I think he's putting himself on a pedestal that he probably isn't even close to reaching. I don't think he's as good as Jordan Staal. But also, and taking that aside, Jordan Staal also was surrounded by some great players. So, and here's my point to this. Jordan Staal, once he went over to Carolina, had nowhere near the success that he did when he was in Pittsburgh. So Brandon Sutter saying that the Penguins were expecting a Jordan Staal, it's a little bit out there for me, and I think that it's just his way of trying to, I guess, pat himself on the back, and it's a way for him to sort of save face. And, you know, that's unfortunate that he's been traded twice by a general manager, and I don't buy it when Rutherford says he's a heck of a hockey player, because if he was a heck of a hockey player, on one hand, why would you trade him twice? But then on the flip side of that, when you do trade him, teams are still very much interested. And it's also coming out today that this deal was pretty much in place for a few weeks. The Brandon Sutter was given the permission to talk to Vancouver to kind of iron out some sort of long-term deal. And he's probably going to get more money than he's worth. And that's one of the reasons why the Penguins traded Brandon Sutter. It wasn't just for a depth move. It wasn't just to bring in a player that could do a little bit more and offer a little more support. It had a lot to do with money. And it's the same systematic problem we had when Jordan Staal was here. Jordan Staal wanted second-line center money when he was a third-line center at best. And we can go back and digest the whole entire trade that Ray Sherrill made with Jordan Staal, but it comes down to dollars and cents, and this was a dollar and cents cap move. I don't think the Penguins felt that they had to make this move necessarily talent-wise, but I think ultimately at the end of the day, it's a move that solidified that third line, because Bonino can definitely slide in that third line or that second line if need be. So all around, it's a good move. I think the best way to say it is I don't respect Brandon Sutter for what he said. I think that if you want to be transparent about it, it's great. If you want to thank the fans and say the Penguins are a world-class organization, that's fine. But at the same time, I think when you overvalue yourself, and that's one of the things we talk about, especially Dan talks about players that overvalue themselves. And I think when you try to make it seem like you're living in some other player's shadow, that's a problem. And I took from it that he probably wasn't happy about being traded, and he probably isn't necessarily happy that maybe the expectation on him was more than it needed to be. But at the end of the day, you're paid to come in and do your job. Sutter, for whatever reason, didn't really flesh out as far as the way the Penguins thought he would. So the Penguins have moved on. And that's pretty much where we stand as far as the Pittsburgh Penguins and Brandon Sutter. He's off to Vancouver. He'll sign a big deal there. And, you know, whether or not Vancouver is a solid team is something else to be said, because Vancouver really isn't a depth team. They've got the Sedin twins. They've got Brandon Sutter. But Sutter is not what I would consider a core player. He's an addition of kind of guy, a role guy, so to speak. He's a little bit better than a role guy, but I would not expect that you're going to see huge numbers out of Sutter. But I think that, once again, and I've said this before, that certain players just can't play in certain systems. And when he goes out to the West in Vancouver, I think he'll probably have more points, and it may be a situation where we look back and say, wow, you know, look what he's doing now. But that's just a symptom of certain players mesh well and play well in certain divisions versus others, and that's just the way it is. So, moving forward, we talked a little bit yesterday about where the Penguins stand right now. They're about $1.4 million in cap. They probably need to add a fourth-line center, which I think Rutherford will do. And I also think at some point you're going to see Skudarian Kunitz probably move just to save cap room and stuff like that. So that's where they stand with that. One of the questions I got yesterday was, what are the odds of Sundqvist, Wilson, Farnham, Rust making this team? I think given the parameters and given what the Penguins have in cap, if they can sign a fourth-line center for little money, $1.1 million, well, not even $1.1, but maybe a million or just under, then I think you may see Sundqvist, Connor Sherry, or some of these other guys fill in the gaps. But I've said this repeatedly, that in order for a team to be fully stocked from head to toe, you can't really have a whole entire fourth line that is made comprised of AHLers. So that's where they stand as far as that goes. I think camp's going to be definitely something very interesting to watch. The Penguins have 13 players on one-way contracts, so that makes for interesting fodder as well. But I do not think that Jim Rutherford's really going to make any moves that are going to surprise anybody at this point. I think that from top to bottom, he's really addressed the depth issue. The question mark that will be the big question mark is obviously on defense, and we talked about that yesterday a bit. But as long as Letang and Ian Cole and Olimata can come back and play a very steady game, then the concern may not be as desperate as we think it is. But time will tell with that type of situation. So at the end of the day, this is what the Penguins have done. They look good up front. Plotnikov looks like he's going to be a beast, but it's just going to depend ultimately at the end of the day of how well he can mesh with Evgeny Malkin. So moving forward, we got some free agents that are still out there, and I don't think a lot of people have been talking about Cody Franson, and I don't think necessarily that Cody Franson will end up in Pittsburgh. It would really surprise me at this point, I think. But I think as far as the free agents that are left, I've got three forwards and three defensemen that are out there that I think, not necessarily the Penguins would target. I don't think they're going to really target anybody. But there's three that are left forward-wise that I think would be really good pickups. Sean Bergenheim is one, $2.75 million cap hit Minnesota, one goal in 17 games with Minnesota, but prior to that he had 18 points in 39 games with Florida. You have Brad Boyes at $2.6 million from Florida. He was bought out, obviously, by the Florida Panthers. He had 38 points in 78 games. You move on to Curtis Glencross, $2.5 million from Washington, 24 points in 38 games before being traded from Calgary. It just didn't really pan out for him there. The guy that I really have been watching and waiting to see where he lands is Mike Santarelli. 1.5 hit cap. He did talk with the Penguins extensively before the Penguins signed Eric Fair, so I'm not sure necessarily whether the Penguins were really serious about him or whether it was a situation. And then there's Cody Franson at $3.31 million. And we've got Dan on the line, so we're going to talk to him. Hey, Dan, how you doing this morning?
You know, I'll be honest, I swear, I was in a good mood when I woke up. I don't know what planet Brandon Sutter's coming from. I really don't. But I'm going to break this down real quick for those who aren't on our Facebook page. I have a question for the Penguins fans and also hockey fans in general. When Brandon Sutter was asked to step up in place of if Malkin was having to go to the first line, go up to the second line and produce, or if Malkin was out, go up to the second and produce, what did Sutter do?
Nothing.
Nothing. He was like a deer caught in headlights. Now, I'll give him props when it comes to face-offs and getting the puck in the net off face-offs. I'll give him credit for that. And I appreciate his time in Pittsburgh. Okay, I realize the circumstances as to how he got traded in the first place into Pittsburgh. And we discussed it back and forth time and time again. And you alluded to earlier, Staal wanted second-line money for being basically a third-line center, and he's getting that in Carolina, by the way. And to that point, the relationship between Rutherford and Sutter has never been good. So Rutherford found an out back in 2011 to trade Sutter at the draft for Jordan Staal and give in to Staal's wishes to play with his brothers because he couldn't get what he wanted in Pittsburgh. Sutter was good in some aspects, but then there are nights and days when Sutter just wasn't there. He was like a deer caught in headlights, and that was bad. You know, I jump on Crosby for not being, you know, for not producing. I jump on Malkin. I jump on everyone. I give credit where credit is due when they produce, and when they don't, when you're paid money to perform in a sport, we expect you to do your duty. So I wish him the best, but he'll fit in great in Vancouver with the Sedin twins who cry all the time. So, you know.
Yeah, one of the things I think is going to happen is I think he'll be productive in Vancouver only because he's going to get more ice time. He's going to be in different situations there. But one of the things that I said at the beginning was to come out, it's bad enough to get traded twice by the same general manager, okay? But to come back out and sort of try to, I guess, pad the walls with mud before the storm hits, you make comment like, well, more or less, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I already mentioned the exact quote, is that basically he's saying he was living in Jordan Staal's shadow and that the Penguins were looking for something in a third-line center that no other team is looking for in the league. And I don't buy that. I think that's crap, and I think that's him laying an excuse for either his performance or for why he's being traded. And at the end of the day, a third-line center, you got to win – gotta win faceoffs. You gotta be a defensive-minded player, which he was not the greatest defensive-minded player, and you have to light the lamp with some consistency. Now, nobody can take anything away from Sutter when it came to the playoffs. That guy, for whatever reason, is a clutch player in the playoffs at times, and we saw it last season, last game of the season. You know, he played great. But the problem is, if you just want to go out and sign players that are great for a moment, that's one thing. That's your Peter Nedved. You know, but this guy just never really seemed to be the type of player. And I don't even think it's fair for him to say the Penguins expected him to be Jordan Staal, because if the Penguins expected him to be Jordan Staal, they would have signed somebody else. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And for all of our friends that are still Jordan Staal fans, even to this day, I have one on my friends list, actually, who loves Jordan Staal but loves the Penguins loyally. For Sutter to say that we were looking for the second coming of Jordan Staal, and that's paraphrasing, is absolute garbage. Okay? Penguins fans understand something, as do most hockey fans, that players cannot be replaced. Okay? We know that there will never be another Bobby Orr. We know that there will never be another Mario Lemieux or another Wayne Gretzky. We all know that the hype around Connor McDavid being the next Sidney Crosby, we all thought was a joke because Crosby's one of a kind. Okay? The same thing goes for a lot of legends that have played this sport. You're not going to replace them. So this little quote about how we were looking to replace someone as great as Jordan Staal, no, we weren't. We wanted someone that was going to produce like Staal did, and that happened few and far between.
Well, and in contrast, Jordan Staal hasn't done anything in Carolina. He's nowhere near.
No, he hasn't. And the reason why, to that point, he hasn't done anything in Carolina is because in Pittsburgh, Shiro built the team the way a team should be built, with supporting cast players on the lines in defensive pairings that way things run like a well-oiled machine. You don't have that with Jim Rutherford. What you have is a little bit of spatterings here and there, a little bit of tinkering, a little bit of fairy dust, and you pray to whatever deity you believe in, if you do, or a five if you're an atheist, that it works out. Whereas when you get someone like Shiro, who knows what they're doing, he makes sure there's a place for everyone on every single line that's up for their talents. Staal was good in Pittsburgh. Want to know why? He had talent on that line that made him good. Just like Crosby and Malkin made their lines good, the people that play on their lines. If you're on the Crosby line, Crosby makes you a better player. Same thing with Malkin.
Right. Well, I think, you know, the difference is really gleaming, I think, between last year and this year. And I'm not by any means cutting Rutherford any type of slack, but I think he's made solid moves this time. And whether or not that transition, because this could all very much blow up in his face again, but I think depth-wise, just looking at what he's done, at the general map of things, this team is night and day better depth-wise, and that was the huge problem last season. And we've said it before. You take a guy like Nick Spaulding, who played on the second line in Nashville, and you dump him on your third and fourth line, he can't do anything. You dump him on your first line, he can't do anything. Although he did have 25, 26 points last season, it's a system of, if you're a third-line player, you play on the third line. Unless you have to go up to the first or the second because someone is injured, then that's one thing. But I think this year is different. I think he's added a lot of depth. But whether or not it really is going to transfer, we're not going to know for at least a month into the season, you know, because there's going to be glitches and growing pains and all of that kind of stuff. But the one thing I wanted to talk about for a second is what the role of a third-line player is. Because back in the old days, a third-liner, especially if you look in the 90s, a third line was a grinding line. The third line would play against your second line or your top line. And it was meant to be a defensive style unit that could bump and grind. Now what we've seen with the new NHL is it's somewhere between 99 and 2002, it started to transfer. And what ended up happening was your third line became scorers, and it moved to your fourth line, which became your bangers and your grinders. But now what we're seeing in the NHL this season, or last season and a couple of seasons prior to that, is now you have all four lines that can score. And the one thing that I think is going to be a detriment to this team is if they don't have those muckers and grinders. And I think they'll be okay, because I think there's a couple players that can play that style. But the reason why I wanted to bring up what a third liner's position is because I wanted to attribute it to Brandon Sutter. A third liner in the new NHL is expected to play a good two-way style of hockey. They're expected to be defensive specialists. They're expected to be able to play on the penalty kill, and they're expected to bury the puck in the net, you know, and that was his job. And I'm not saying he failed at his job, but I think when you go out and you sign a player for $3.3 million, especially in the new salary cap era of the NHL, $3.3 million is an awful lot of money to dump into a guy that's averaging maybe 15 points a season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely. And another catch. Yes, I'm old school. Okay? I know people get tired of me bringing up Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, Ulf Samuelsson, Mario Lemieux. Someone asked me yesterday how I felt about the Sutter trade, and I thought it was a good, solid trade. Okay? I think that the Kessel trade, even though we paid too much for Kessel, I think could pay off. But as Jeff alluded to, here's the catch, and this is important, ladies and gentlemen. How will these guys translate to the Johnston system of the Penguins? Because if this doesn't pan out, then it's back to square one. Because what we're doing is we're adding depth, which is a good thing. But however, it's going to be, you know, about a month or so for things to iron out easily enough. Because you got to bear in mind, we thought, remember the first home game last year, Jeff?
Yep.
What was Morehouse doing in the, you know, we were on a scoring rampage. What was Morehouse doing?
Chugging his beer.
Acting like we won the cup. Getting Gary thought we had won the cup. You've got Mario watching the game intently like, all right, calm down. I'm trying to watch the game here. I'm trying to see what's going on. You've got David Morehouse celebrating as if we've already won the cup. And I expect him to do the same thing this year. It's celebrate like we've already won the cup on game one. You cannot tell in preseason or in the first month how a team that has added so many pieces will come together. Okay?
Well,
so I'm warning everyone today, take preseason and also the first month as an evaluation as to how the season will go. Because it's unpredictable per the usual. But also know that you'll have a better grasp, say mid-late November, as to how your season is going to be. And it doesn't matter if you just won the cup or if you hit the jackpot in the lottery as far as hitting a really good draft pick or two, along with a good coach and a good GM.
These, you know, these moves are similar to me because, and the reason why I say that is, and I'm not going to go into details, but with Dan Bylsma when he brought in Morrow, Murray, and Jerome Iginla, it's, you know, I'm going to tell you now, if these guys that they bring in, if Kessel doesn't work under this system, you can bet your dollar Johnston will be fired. Because and a lot of people have said, well, no, that'll be Rutherford. Well, Rutherford's brought in the players. He's done his job as a general manager. He's added the pieces that the team thinks we need. At this point, if it doesn't transition and they don't adjust to this high-tempo puck possession style, then the failure is on the coach because the coach is the one who has the authority and the skills to hone these guys to play a certain system. I don't think it's the right system for this team to play. I'm totally against a high puck possession team because it's like when you look at football, you know, you always look at how long the football team, the offense has the ball on the field versus how long the defense has been on the field. And that's the same thing with puck possession. They want the Penguins to control the flow. They want them to really have high numbers when it comes to puck possession. But if you think that a run-and-gun system is going to work against somebody like the Bruins or somebody like the Capitals or somebody like Columbus, you got another thing coming.
Because, you know, yeah, the Capitals added T.J. Oshie. Yeah, they did. But, you know, as long as they have Alexander Ovechkin on that team, as long as they have Nick Backstrom on that team in a defense that's willing to rock and sock every night, it's not going to help you in division because you know what? The Flyers, they can stop running gun. The Rangers, the Capitals, the Devils. Our division is locked with teams that can beat this running gun system. That's one of the reasons why the system failed last year is division came up, realized the system wasn't going to change, and realized this is how we can beat the Penguins. And the Penguins ended up waiting until the last game of the season to get into the postseason as a wild card. So Johnston has to change this system. If he does not change this system, we will know within a month where this team stands for the entire season.
Well, it was interesting because last season they played the same style, give or take, for the majority of the season. And it looked like all the adjustments that the other teams had to make was push a left-wing lock. And once they pushed that left-wing lock onto the Penguins, they, you know, the Penguins would cough the puck up at center ice, you know, 8 times out of 12. And I think that you can have all the high tempo, all the high skating, all the fast skating, et cetera, that you want. But if you cannot match hit for hit, then there's no way your system's going to work, because all that's going to happen is they're going to cough up the puck and they're going to get buried in the corners. And that's, it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust. I mean, I think the system's going to be very, very familiar and very much the same. I think just adding Kessel changes that dynamic, but I don't think at the end of the day, if they try to play that run and gun, you know, very Russian style, I just don't think it's going to work.
I'm going to tell you right now, if it stays running gun, we could be very much sitting on pins and needles all season waiting for changes that may not come. I hope Dan Johnston adjusts the system accordingly, realizes that fun gun didn't work, and try to see what would work with this system and these players. But I agree with you, Dad. I have to agree with you. Rutherford's brought in the players. It's up to the coach to get it done. If the coach can't get it done, he's out.
And really quickly, because we're running out of time, I wanted to get, in 30 seconds or less, do you think that the Penguins' rivalry at this point is more with Washington and Columbus than it is with Philadelphia?
Nothing is ever going to replace the rivalry with Philadelphia. But that being said, Columbus and Washington are becoming really deep rivals as well. Especially given that Columbus is only 3 hours away from Pittsburgh. And it's only 6 hours to Washington, if I remember correctly. So both of those teams are becoming really good rivalry games for the Penguins. But you'll never beat the nastiness of Flyers Penguins ever.
Well, Dan, I thank you for calling in, bud.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
And there you have it, from Dan's mouth to your ears. You know, I disagree a little bit with him as far as the Flyers go. I think he's right. I think the rivalry is always going to be there with Philadelphia, but those couple of games against Columbus were nasty ones last year, and Washington, you know, during the regular season were nasty. And I don't think it's so much that the Penguins don't have that natural thing with Philadelphia anymore. I just think that the components have changed as far as players. And I always think it'll be nasty, but something's telling me that Columbus and Pittsburgh are going to start to have some nastiness, just like the Penguins and Winnipeg, just nasty series. And I think that that's good to have interdivisional rivalries and conference rivalries. And I'm always going to hate the Flyers, and those are going to be always the games I want to watch. But I also think that there is something sparking between Columbus and Pittsburgh and also Washington and Pittsburgh. And I think of the two, believe it or not, as much as Pittsburgh and Washington, I think what you're really going to see is Pittsburgh and Columbus really start to build some nastiness. And, you know, we'll see what this season brings. Rutherford has made some good decisions thus far. It's too early to really predict how well this team is going to do. But I think they're going to end up being better than they were last year, but it's just going to depend, and time is going to tell. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. We'll try to get back at you tomorrow with some new news and information. Hit us up on Facebook, Penn's Vlog Post, or hit us up on our blog at Penn's Vlog, the number 7 at blogspot.com.